It's always a special schus in our yeshiva to host special speakers during the month of Elul. And in particular, we've been graced on a number of occasions with somebody who has become a frequent and very welcome visitor here at our yeshiva, Rav Bezalel Dinsky Shlita, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva to Or Reuven. We have to give a special Hakaras HaTov to Rabbi Joshua Blass, who has a close relationship with Rabbi Radinsky and was instrumental in setting up all of the logistical arrangements for Rabbi Radinsky to be with us this evening. The Torah famously brings out in his Hakdama to Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, he quotes the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, that records the pasuk in Amos that we start blowing the shofar at the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Elul to recall the notion of im yitaka shofar b'ir ve'am lo yecheradu. If a shofar sound blasts in the city, how can people not tremble? And there is a trembling and a trepidation that we feel during the month of Elul as we prepare ourselves for what we hope will be a full-fledged tshuva. But it's also explained the Bali Musar done in a fashion of Vigilu Bira'adah, that we tremble also with a rejoicing. How do we combine the trembling and the rejoicing? Different explanations of what this might mean. But one very clear explanation is that we rejoice in the fact that we know how to tremble. We rejoice that we're in a yeshiva environment where we understand that the month of Elul is a time of trepidation, that it's a time of introspection, that it's a time to bring in, as the Lashon of the Prisha says, it's time to bring in Chachamim Shiyidvishu Barabim Mechol Kehillah V'Yoraru Ha'am L'Tshuva, to bring in special Chachamim to inspire us for Tshuva. Of course, the Prisha says that in the context that that's one particular avoda of Elul. That was the only avoda. It wouldn't also include the shofar blast. There were also other avodos within Chodesh Elul, but at least we certainly are mekayim, that we understand that we need to be driven, we need to be inspired and uplifted in order to reach the highest possible levels of tshuva. We welcome Rav Radinsky, and we especially appreciate his ability to inspire us and also to sound the clarion call for tshuva. And of course, we look forward to Rav Radinsky sharing his words of Torah and inspiration with us.
Always a pleasure to come to Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. I'm already part of the family. I usually speak Purim time, where it's much more appropriate. I always considered myself more of a Purim Rav than anything else. I have a lot of deep roots here, Talmidim that are my Talmidim online. Of course, they don't go online directly, they use Goyim, I'm sure they go online, but they get Shiurim. And my first experience giving shiur in the yeshiva here was actually the last day of the Zman before Pesach. And I just recently told Rabbi Beitler, my dear Yedid, we seichet to spend the summers together, that it was right before Pesach and I was completely drained in my business. That's the busiest time of the year before Pesach. And I just finished my Mechiras Chometz in the shul, and I gave shiur in the Haggadah, and I was completely drained. I was ready, I was retired, and I came here into the city. I figured it's the last night Seder before Pesach. I figured I'll be speaking to a handful of boys that are probably more tired than I am, and I'll tell them something on Krishma Lamita, some Dvar Torah on Krishma Lamita, and that'll be it. And I told Rabbi Beitler, I walked in here and I was energized. There were hundreds of guys. I don't know, it was packed. And they were alive. I spoke for well over an hour because they gave me the energy. So ever since then, I became a staunch chosid of this yeshiva. So it's always a schus to be here. This week happens to be the first week of the Zman in my yeshiva, so it's a busier time than usual. But as Rabbi Reis just said, I view it as chus, an elul, to be able to have even a little impact on Choshev Bnei Torah. So I'm going to share with you some ideas that connect to Chodesh Elul and connect to the parsha that we're reading, and really connect to the whole idea of the Yom HaMeroim. I'm actually going to touch upon the Pirkei de Rebbe Elazar that was mentioned, very difficult, in the Torah, that actually says that the reason why we blow shofar on Chodesh Elul, the first reason, is not for tshuva. It's just as a commemorance to the tkiya that they blew on Rosh Chodesh when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Mount Sinai in the final time, the third time, and they didn't want to run into the same tragic conclusion that they had the first time, where we had the Egel Azov. The simple reading of the Pirkei de Rebbe Elazar is that the sounding of the shofar was nothing more than a way of getting the message out that this is the precise time that Moshe left, so that the Jewish people should not make the toss. They should make the mistake to think that Moshe went up a different day and make that same mistake again in counting and calculating the days. The obvious question is that has nothing to do with us. What does that have to do with us? Why are we blowing today? Why are we commemorating today tkiyas that were blown on Rosh Chodesh itself, not the whole month, on Rosh Chodesh, just as a way of letting the Yid know that that's when Moshe went up? What does that have to do with us today? Why do we blow it today? Then the Torah goes on to bring the second reason, which is the reason of tshuva, which we understand, as the Rambam explains, that the sounding of the shofar is not just the gzeres hakosov, it's not just the absolute, the rice obligation, but it brings in tshuva. But that first reason, which is the reason brought down in the Pirkei de Rebbe Elazar, doesn't seem to connect to our tkiya shofar that we have today. Tkiya shofar that we have today, what does that have to do with Moshe going up on Har Sinai? I think furthermore, we have to analyze, why did they blow shofar? That does not seem to be the most effective way to let people know. They should have just made an announcement. Moshe went up today, this is the precise date. They could have even had a Sfira process where you count today as the first day, today is the second day. They could have had many creative ways of letting people know when Moshe went up and when he's supposed to come down, when he's scheduled to come down. What was the sounding of the shofar? What did that do? The Torah writes that it's through that shofar that Hashem was nis'ala, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself got elevated. Also very difficult to understand. What's the great elevation for Hashem? It was a bell. It was nothing more than the sounding of a bell, of letting people know a schedule. What's so inspiring? Why was Hashem nis'ala? Hashem was elevated by that blowing. So I want to talk a little bit about the parsha. This week's parsha is one of the most fascinating parshias, and so appropriate during these weeks of Elul. The parsha starts off with a very compromised situation. Soldier goes to war, and in the fighting he sees they capture his woman there, and he has a cheshek, v'choshakta bo v'ro'iso b'ashivyon. You see a woman, and you have a desire, you want to take her. So the Torah gives us a process, a halachic process, of how it can be permitted to marry this woman. Now, right away, when you read the parasha, right, it's very, very strange that a Jew is going to fight a war, putting his life on the line. Thank you. Putting his life on the line for the Jewish people. And this is what he does during the wartime. For Yisra Bashivi, he's looking at a shiksa. Rav Chatzkel Abramsky, Zechat Tzadik Levracha, when he was in London, He used to give a shir. He was a brilliant chacham. If you look at his svarim in the Tosefta, he opened up the Tosefta. So he used to give a shir for non-religious college-age students. They'd come over to his house Friday night. He'd give them a little something on the parsha. And it wasn't a prepared thing. They would sit together and he would go through the parsha with them a little bit and try to take something inspiring from the parsha. Came to Parshas Kisetze. He didn't prepare before. They walked in, he opens up the Chumash. And he starts, and he's thinking, oh, they. He's talking out to a bunch of secular Jewish kids, college kids. And what's he going to talk about now? Going to Muhammad, saying the sheikhs are taking her home. This is not the right thing. So he's thinking this. He writes, from Chatzkel Bramsky, he says, it ended up being his most inspiring shir he ever gave. Because he came, he says, he had siyata d'shmaya. So as he was giving the shir, he tells the boys, he says, you know, the Chazal tell us, lo dibra Torah ela keneged yetzer hara, which means, this is not an ideal shidduch. This is not a shidduch that you come home, and you come to shul and you say, I got this great girl. You know, and you're not going to be able to say that the Rosh Hashiva was the Shatchan. This is not a very geshmaka situation. But Leidibra Torah connected the Yetzirah, the Torah knew the human weaknesses, and the Torah addressed them. The Torah said, the Torah knew that better, like the Gemara says in Kiddushin, let's find a way to be matarit. So he turned to the boys and he says, you know, when you read the Chumash, when you read the Torah, it's very easy to dismiss. It's very easy to read the mitzvahs and to say, they're not talking to me. They're not talking to me. That's the best way to dismiss somebody. There's a presidential debate, as you know, going on right now. There's a convention. There's going to be another convention next week. And Nebuchadnezzar, the current president, has very little that he could really stand for, other than that he's created a new type of shiduchim taka. He doesn't have all that much of a record to be able to say, this is what I have to contribute. So the best argument they have is they look at the opponent, they go, he's disconnected. Because that's the best dismissal of an individual. Talmidim very often, the way they separate the Torah life that the Rebbe is trying to give them is they say, the Rebbe's not connected. He doesn't know what I'm going through. He doesn't understand me. Reb Chatzkel Abramsky said, you see from this mitzvah, the Torah found a way to permit this compromised situation to get the woman, she becomes a giyuris, to permit her. Why? Because the Torah knew the human weaknesses. He says that means that every mitzvah in the Torah is talking to you and to your weaknesses. And it took that into account. And he says the boys were so taken, it was the most, really the most success that he ever had in one shir that he gave. But the fact remains that what Reb Chatzkel is saying is correct, that the Torah permitted it. Whether you're proud of the shidduch, you're not proud of the shidduch, the Torah permitted it. But as soon as you finish reading the parasha Yefas Torah, the Torah goes on to talk about Ben Sarah Murrah. There is no worse tragedy than a Ben Sarah Murrah. There is no worse tragedy to a parent, much worse than to the Ben Sarah Murrah himself, the parent. I can tell you, I'm in chinuch now over 20 years. When you tell a parent anything about their child, they are 24 hours a day thinking about it. That's the child has a problem. Imagine a parent should have to take their child to become a Ben Sarah Murrah. There's nothing worse. There is nothing worse. What did they do wrong to deserve a Ben Sarah Murrah? What did they do wrong? So the Torah says, a Ben Sarah Murrah is a product of the Yefas Torah. It's a product of that type of a marriage, of this Yefas Torah. When I first saw this chazal, I was astounded. The guy did nothing wrong. He followed the dictates. He didn't. This wasn't intermarriage. This happened. He came to his rabbi at home. He said, Rabbi, what do I do? The rabbi opened up Parshas Kisetze. He opened up the Gemara and Kiddushin. And he told him, this is the process. And the guy followed the process. He did what the Torah demanded. He went to his Rav, said, I want you to be Mesaver Kedushin. Now again, the invitation is not the best invitation. Right? It doesn't say Makala Besula Hamuhulelas. Right? Doesn't say that. But it's a kosher chasana. The Rav is the Mesaver Kedushin. The guy didn't do anything halachically wrong. How could he end up with a Ben Sarumara? How could that be the conclusion? That's worse than having Dalit Mises Bezdin. It would be worse than getting, if you took a parent and said, would you rather go through Dalit Mises Bezdin or have a Ben Sarumara? They would much prefer to have Dalit Mises Bezdin. How could that be? How could such a conclusion be? It's really astounding. It's really astounding. So I want to share with you an idea which I think will also put Chodesh Elul into the right place. And it ties also into a story that I heard many years ago that happened to one of our Gedolei Hador, Rav Eliashiv, Rav Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Rav Yosef Shalom Eliashiv, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, when he was a younger man, was walking down the street. He was a person that was quiet, very idle person. Didn't speak up. He just learned Yomam Valayla. I recently read that his wife, Alea Shalom, who was the daughter of Rabbi Levine was a fire, a personality of fire. Very, very socially connected to everybody. And his daughter was like her father. And Rav Eliashiv was a person who learned 18 to 19 hours a day. There was no socializing. There was no schmoozing. There was no, sitting around by dinner and hopping a chat. So she told her father, I am very inspired by this young man. I'd love to marry him. Who am I going to talk to? And Rav Aryeh Levine said, I'll talk to you. And it says in the book, he used to come over every day to schmooze with his daughter. Could you imagine? What a honeymoon. Schmooze with my father for the first summer Rishona. Comes over every day to schmooze with me. So Rav Eliashiv was not a schmoozer. Wasn't a schmoozer. Rav Eliashiv was walking down the street and they were having a protest. A secular protest. This is not like, these protests that they have. A secular protest. And it was supporting the women's rights. And as he was walking down the street, somebody got up to speak, a secular person. And this is the part that Rav Eliashiv heard. They gave a fiery speech. And they said, the reason why the women have no rights or not, they don't have the rights they should be having, it's all because of the religious. Because the religious don't value the woman. They don't respect the woman. And that's why even they were blaming us, the religious, for even the secular lack of rights. It's like a trickle-down effect. Rav Eliashiv was dressed in his Yerushalmi garb, his long jacket, with his hat, with his beard. And he walked by as this was going on. He stopped. As this person finished speaking, he asked the organizer, he said, is it okay if I say a couple of words? They were like, but they were so intrigued. They were so intrigued by it that they said, okay. Rav Eliashiv gets up. And Rav Eliashiv says, I have to say something. He says, I just heard the last speech, the end of the last speech. He says, I want to share with you something. He says, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but all I do is I study the Talmud. So I can share with you a little bit about the Talmud's view about a woman. He said, so let me tell you how the religious people feel about a woman. He said, the holiest man in the Jewish people is the Kohen Gadol. The holiest man. The Vilna Gaon at the end of Zeis HaBrocha writes that the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael comes from the Kohen Gadol. The holiest man. The holiest place is the Kodesh Kedoshim, the Beis HaMikdash. And the holiest day of the year is Yom Kippur. When these three things come together, there's nothing more holy. And the Kohen Gadol wants to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's one external thing that could stop him from being able to go in. If he doesn't have a wife. That's the whole Gemara in Yuma. So Rav Eliashiv said, the audacity to say that we don't value women, the holiest day, the holiest man, the holiest place, if there's no wife, he can't go in. That's how much we value women. And they all applauded him. When he came back to Kohel, and this whole thing happened by mistake, he happened to be walking down the street. When he came back to the Kohel and he told his friends what he did. By the way, this story made it into the newspapers. They were shocked. They said, Rav Eliashiv, that's still not you. Forgetting anything else. I mean, I'm not very shy. And I don't see myself doing anything like that. Rav Eliashiv just got up there and just started. And his answer was very profound. And I think his answer will tie everything together here. The answer he gave was as follows. And this will connect to Kiseitse. This will connect to also the Alshech asks. Those of you that have Nedarim fresh in your mind, I'm sure all of you do. The Gemara says, La chulin sho'ocheloch. That's a Lashon Neder, right? If you say La Chulin, because the word La Chulin means Lo Chulin. The La stands for no. If you say Le Chulin, that would be a non-Neder Lashon. But if you say La Chulin, La Chulin is equivalent to saying Lo Chulin. So the Alshech HaKadosh asks, why does it say Kiseitse La Melchoma? It should say Kiseitse Limulchama. Because Lamulchama could also be translated Lo Lamulchama. Right? You're not going to war. Kiseitse Lamulchama would be Lo Lamulchama. So that's the Alshech HaKadosh's point. I think, my friends, the answer is like this, and this is what Rav Eliashiv said, which is why I think the idea here is Ben Seira Umayra is not a punishment. Not a punishment. There's no avera you could do to warrant a ben seira umayra. Doesn't happen. So how does a ben seira umayra come into being? A ben seira comes into being from being groomed to be a ben seira umayra. A ben seira umayra is not a punishment. It's a conclusion of grooming process. What is the grooming process of a Ben Seira Meir? Ben Seira Meir is brought up in a home. When my son became Bar Mitzvah, my first son, my Bechor, my dream was I'm going to buy him an unbelievable Peretzot with every hider that's possible. And I drove the Sefer batty, making sure that the bottom, and you could go through the bottom, the bat that's Nifrad Lagamri, and then the Ritzus had to be black on both sides. And I made him, by the time I finished with him, he needed therapy. But I told him not to blame me. I told him not to blame me. I said, this comes from my father. I remember when I went, my father was a public school teacher making a very, very basic living. I remember when he took me to the Sefer to buy my phone, it's like yesterday. And he said, I want you to know, I'm a public school teacher, I don't have the money. I want you to give me tefillin for my son as though I would be the Gadol Hador. If I was the Rosh Hashiva, the Gadol Hador, that's the kind of tefillin I want you to give me for my son. So it made an effect on me that I wanted to do the same for my son. When I, right after I became Rov, I went to a Sofer to get mezuzahs. And as I'm there, there's a father with his bar mitzvah boy buying tefillin. The same picture that I was looking back to my bar mitzvah. But it was a little different. The father of the bar mitzvah boy tells the sefer, you know, what's the cheapest pair you can get? And the sefer starts telling him, well, there's dakas and gassas, depends what the, if you're getting it from a behemah gassa, or you're getting from a behemah daka. And it could be orechot, it could be made out of one piece of skin, it could be the guy says, I want basic. Just give me the basic film. I felt so bad for this bar mitzvah boy that I was ready to take from my own pocket and say, oh, let me chip in. It's a stranger. He should have a better pair of film. I look out the window, because the sofer is right, Rabbi Schneider is right in front. The father parked right in front of the door. That was in 1990. They just came up with a new car then, if those of you that none of you remember, but 1990, the new car was the Q45, Infiniti Q45. They don't have it anymore. Turned to an M and a B and a G, whatever it is. But then it was the Infiniti Q45. This car was gewaltig. This was Olam HaBa. Anani HaKovid, you're driving in the clouds, right? It was gewaltig. I turned to the father, I said, let me ask you a question. The interior in your vehicle has all the hidugim of film. Behema Gasa. Orechot. It's all beautiful. You would never sit on a Behema Daka. Forget the vinyl or material. And what goes on your son's head, that you want kolakulas? So he changed his tune. The father changed his tune. But we breed. The environment is what creates the child. When this person went out to war, he was l'chatchila not going to fight for the Jewish people. Because if he would have been fighting for the Jewish people, he would have never fell in with the sheiks. He wouldn't have fallen in. That's the pshat. Ki seitze la melchama lo la melchama. You weren't really going for war. Because if you were going for war, you wouldn't have had this conclusion. You were there for yourself. For Ra'isa Bashibi, you were looking out for yourself. Now you married a woman. Why did you marry this woman? Was there any spirituality in your choice? Did you pick her because she has good character? Did you pick her because she's a growing individual? Did you pick her because of anything positive? You picked her because you had a lust, you had a desire. So now this poor child is brought up in a home that the marriage is built on taiva. The marriage is built on desire. That's what's in this marriage. And therefore the child is a product of their environment. It's not a punishment. It's a conclusion. The conclusion will be, if this is the kind of home that you build, which is on taiva, the conclusion will be such and such. Rebbe Yashiv turned to his friends. He said, my friends, I can only tell you what Rebbe Akiva says. He said, my friends, I wake up in the morning. I say, V'ahavtos Hashem Elokecha, sheyehei shem shamayim esayi v'al yodecha. You should make a Kiddush Hashem wherever you go. Rebbe Yashiv said, when do I have an opportunity to make a Kiddush Hashem? Every day I pray I should make a Kiddush Hashem. Here Hashem put me in this place. At this moment that I was able to get up and do something against my character. That's why I got up. Which means that Rebbe Yashiv was able to do it not because of the moment, but because his mindset was there from the beginning that he wants to make a Kiddush Hashem. He woke up every day, how can I make a Kiddush Hashem? The conclusion then happens. The Kiddush Hashem then evolves. Because that is what was in his heart at all times. I believe that's what Chodesh Elul is. When the Jewish people made the Egel Azov, so we know there was a miscalculation. Miscalculation. They didn't count the first day. They didn't realize the first day didn't count. Moshe didn't come up on the first day itself. That day didn't count. The next day counted. But really, it wasn't a miscalculation. It was the fact that they were ready to do the Egel. They woke up in the morning ready and prepared to do an Egel Azov. The calculation was just a way of making the Egel Azov. But the feeling and the sense to make an Egel Azov is there way before the Egel Azov comes to be. Just like the Ben Sora Moira doesn't evolve when he's 12 turning bar mitzvah. The Ben Sora Moira is something that's groomed. The Egel Azov was there ready to happen. The Jews also could have made the cheshbon, you know, maybe the first day doesn't count. Maybe. But they were ready to make the egel. The third time that Moshe went up, we weren't just trying to let them know what day it is. We were trying to change the mindset. We were trying to give them a sense of Shemayim, of O Malchus Shemayim. So they won't make the mistake. The mistake only comes because you're ready to make that mistake. If you had the true Yiras Shemayim, then the Egel Azov wouldn't have evolved. So that shofar was not there just as a way of letting, like a bell, letting people know. It was a way of bringing them closer to Hashem so that their priority will be in the right place. Once the priority is in the right place, then they won't make any mistakes. And that's what is meant. That shofar wasn't just there as a date reminder. It was there to bring us all closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what that shofar was there. What is Elul? Elul is not tshuva, that's Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Aseret Yemei Tshuva are days that we spend repenting. We do tshuva. Elul is Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. Elul is when we change our perspective. Elul is a beautiful idea from Reb Reuven Katz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Lomzer Rosh Hashiva. He deals with the contradiction in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about what's the first judgment they give a person when he comes up to Shemayim. The Gemara in Bama Madlikin says one thing, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin says something else. One Gemara says, Nosata v'nosata be'emuna. The other Gemara says that they say, Kovato itim l'torah. So what is it? Is it Nosata v'nosata? Do they ask you about honesty? Or do they ask you about learning? So Rav Reuven Katz had a great idea. He says the human being is made up of a physical side and a spiritual side. Right? And they both are going in different directions. And we have the obligation to feed and nurture and nourish our neshama. And if we don't do that, and we only feed our guf, we're gazlonim from our neshama. We're stealing. So he says, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna kavati itim l'torah is one question. If you weren't kovea itim l'torah, if you didn't nurture your neshama, then you weren't honest. Because you were in charge of these two entities, and you were dishonest in the way you gave out the funding. Right? You weren't honest. So Nosata v'Nosata, it's all one thing. Elul is a time for perspective, to make this a priority, to make our spiritual side a priority. That's the shofar of Elul. The shofar of Elul is not there to only do tshuva. The shofar of Elul is to change our perspective, to stop being the Kisei Tzei LaMelchama type of people, that are busy v'ro'isa bashivya, that are busy only running after their bodily instincts. The job of Elul is to internalize and to nurture our spiritual side, and to become more spiritualized, to energize our spirituality. That's the function of Elul, of to become ani l'dodi. That's the function. Years ago, I heard of a fascinating story that happened in Bnei Brak. There was a gemach. There was a free loan agency in Bnei Brak, a gemach, that got an unbelievable donation from nowhere. Some woman, secular woman from Ramat Gan, left them her apartment in her will. Her apartment. That was her main asset. She left it for the gemach. They got a letter that they get her apartment. Needless to say, this was the biggest donation they've ever got. It was more than if you took all the money that was donated to that gemach, accumulatively over all the years. It was unbelievable. But of course, if something sounds too good to be true, it ended up being too good to be true. Because the inheritors, the secular older woman's children, came and they took the gemach into litigation. They litigated. And they said that this can't be. The grandmother was a secular person. She would never take her main asset and not leave it for her children and write it over to some charity that she had very little connection. She gave like a couple hundred shekel a year. She had no real connection. She's going to go and give it to them. She must have been, you know, suffering from some form of senility that she went and did such a thing. The family said, listen, if you want, we'll give you $10,000. We'll give the Gemach $10,000 check. Give us the apartment and we're done. Otherwise, we're fighting you in court. So the Gemach was ready to accept it. They realized they're against the wall. This family is going to hire an attorney. It's a secular legal system in Eretz Yisrael. It's not going to work. But before they did it, they went to the stipler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, just to get his blessing. And the stipler asked him a couple of questions about the Gemach. And then he said, go for it. Fight it. Hire an attorney. Go for the kill. And they were shocked that the stipler would tell them to do such a thing. They said, but the Gemach has no money. He said, you're a Gemach. Borrow. Borrow money, hire an attorney, and fight. Okay? Stipler gives you your marching orders. You go. Stipler. So, they come to court. Yosef Palud was the judge. May not ring a bell, he was a judge many years ago in Tel Aviv. A super anti-religious judge. So they walked in, and their emunas chachamim started getting more shaking. The stipler said, okay, we did what he told us. So there was a preliminary hearing, and both sides presented their side, and the Gemach had to agree that the other side sounded much more convincing than their side. Because there was very little to stand on why in the world this woman would have given her apartment to the Gemach. The judge, from nowhere, it was like a basco coming out of his mouth. The judge turns to the family of the children. He says, I want to tell you my personal feelings. Not legal, my personal feelings. Yesh lachem chutzpah gedola. You have some nerve for trying to take this kolel, this gemach, to court. Ha'ima shelachem, your mother, ratzta liknot chelek pe'olam haba. You hear the secular judge? Hate, a guy who hates mitzvahs. Your mother wanted to buy a chelek in olam haba. Ata yodea maze olam haba. Tiraze klum. The apartment is nothing. Your mother wanted to give the little apartment to get an olam haba. Vatem mochim et ha'ima shelcham legehenim. And you're selling your mother to Gehenim? Shame on you. Needless to say, everything turned around. And there was a settlement made, an out-of-court settlement, but most of the apartment, most of the valued apartment, the kolel got. They came later to the stipler, and they asked him, stipler, what's going on? How did you know? And the stipler said very simple. He said, they would have loved to hear, you know, people like heebie-jeebie. An angel came to me and told me. No. He said, very simple. He says, I asked you about this gemach. This gemach is unique. You have a yeshiva, even a holy yeshiva like Abed Yitzchak Elchanan. I come from yeshiva, so Reuven. So we try to do things l'shem shemayim. But there are people that are employed. People are living off yeshiva, people are making parnasa. It's hard to say everything is 100% l'shem shemayim. Stipler said, but the gemach, I asked all of you, is anybody paid from this gemach? And you said no. So the gemach is just purely l'shem shemayim. There's nobody here that has any personal benefit or gain. He says, so who was the family taking to court? Shemayim. This is not easy to win a court against Shemayim. I knew Shemayim would win. If the Gemach would have been an organization that people got salaried and paid, then I wouldn't have given you that verdict. But it was L'shem Shemayim. That's what it means, pure spirituality. The Stipler was such a man. If you want to know, and I'll end with this, how the Stipler ended up with his wife, I'll tell you, a romantic connection. When the Stipler was with his wife before, when they were during their courtship, and it was a question of whether this is a good shidduch, the Stipler told his future wife, who was the sister of the Chazon Ish, he said, there's something I have to share with you, an experience, where that way I can know if we connect. He said, when I was drafted to the Russian army, the Stipler was in the Russian army, he says, I refused to be Mechalel Shabbos. I said, I will not be Mechalel Shabbos. And I was pushed and pushed. They took me to my superiors, and they told me, there's no such thing. Shabbos is like any other day. And I said, I can't and won't work on Shabbos. So my superior said, you know what, Jew? I'll tell you what. You walk down a row where we have Russian soldiers on both sides. Each one will hit you over the head with their pistol. And if you're ready to tolerate, endure that, we'll give you off a sack. The Stipler gladly accepted. And he walked down, you know, in Russia they used to call those soldiers the Kozakin. They weren't very Jew-loving. And he walked down this row and he was beaten. But he was a powerful man, the Stipler. He was physically a strong person. Beaten. He was bleeding from his head, bleeding from his body. He turns to this girl and he says, but I did all of that for Shabbos. He says, do you know the pleasure that I felt walking down that line? Could you feel with me my pleasure? This is what he asked her. And she looked at him and went, wow, you're so lucky. He says, you're my wife. Because no other girl was able to connect to that pleasure. Some of them were impressed with what he did. Some of them understood he was prepared to do it. But they couldn't connect to that pleasure. You know what that is? I have a Talmud went out with a girl. He likes to hike. He went out with a girl. She's great. Everything was gewaldic. He tells me, Rebbe, I don't know if I could commit. So what's the problem? She doesn't appreciate hiking the way I do. She's willing to do it with me. But it won't be L'Shem Shemayim. It won't be L'Shem Shemayim. To the Stipler, connecting to him meant connecting to that spiritual side of him. It meant she had to feel that. That is what Elul is about. What Elul is about is to invigorate our spirituality, to make us into spiritual people. To make us into people that are not prepared to do an Egel Azov. To make us into people that are running to do a Kiddush Hashem. And if we switch our priorities, we will see a year that's full of growth in Torah, of growth in Yerushalayim, of growth in Avos Yisrael. But it's all the priority. Elul is the time to create our priorities. And that's the job of Elul. All of Yisrael. And that's my bracha to all of you, and to myself, to all of Klal Yisrael. We should all be zeiche to become a spiritualized nation and be yachad to see, or chodesh al-sinitar, to see the Kudosh Shleim of Amir Vigman.